This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
He's Walter Flaccus, and he's next.
And now, from the legendary Studio B, so you're in Seattle with Gregor.
There's probably some adage here to be like, things change, and we have to accept the change as it comes, otherwise we live a life full of burden, or something like whatever that crap is. But for real, when we make changes to our lives, it can add an extra amount of stress. I can't stress enough how exciting it is to have Walter join us. Walt, as he's going on the air, because he's been the nicest dude and the easiest transition. Meeting this guy immediately felt like an old pair of pants. Well, I'm sorry that I just compared you to pants, Walter. Walt, say his name right, Gregor. Walt! He's a real joy. He's got a great backstory. I beat around the bush with it, but he was in a kick-ass band. Still is in a kick-ass band, and we're going to learn all about it now. Not just radio, but both sides of the business. My pleasure to welcome Walt to So You're in Seattle. Hi, welcome to the end.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. Someone to have someone new around is always exciting.
a new body to kick.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe poke. We're not at kick yet. I saved that for karate, adult karate.
Right.
Moved here from Chicago. That's new, but you've been here a bunch before. You got a girlfriend that lives here.
Yep.
So you're familiar with Seattle, so it's not like you're just wandering in off the street.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's okay.
I've been coming here for years because I've been in a band.
Yeah.
Am in a band. So on tour, stopped by, I've experienced this city for the past 20 plus years.
Yeah.
And I've always felt a connection here. And I've actually tried to get a job at the end in the past.
Oh, man.
And, you know, things just haven't panned out until this time, and everything just lined up, and it's been great.
That's super cool. You came here from Chicago.
Right.
That's a big, fun city.
Chicago is one of those places. I agree. First, it's a great city.
Yeah.
When I lived there originally, the band came out of Chicago, and we had some success on our second album, so we all moved to Los Angeles. And then I would go back and see Chicago like I see any other city. Oh my God, what a great city it is.
Yeah.
And then to finally be able to go back there and live and work for the past 10 years, fantastic. And I told myself I will never take it for granted again because it is such a great city. But Seattle is a really great city too, and there's it's got a lot to offer. So I'm excited to explore some new territory here.
The Great City Club is not exclusive to one city alone.
No, but there's not that many. I mean, look, you can find cool things about just about any place, but there are some that really rise to the top. Chicago, Seattle. I like Austin, Texas.
I've never been to Austin.
Pretty cool place. I mean, unless you go by during South by Southwest, because then it's a little. Bananas. But if you go when it's not, it's laid back, lazy, and they love music. So it's cool.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay. We'll get to the band thing here in a little while because
sure.
That's really fascinating, but we'll tease people along a little
right.
bit. Where are you from?
Originally from Illinois. Small town, Western Illinois University is there. It's called Macomb, Illinois, middle cornfields, 20,000 people. Parents were from Chicago, so I would end up going there a lot for vacations and whatnot.
Sure.
So I always had, and my dad was a university professor, so I always had that culture and whatnot. But, small town. And that's actually where I met my best friend, Christopher, who is in the band. And we actually came out of this really small town and migrated to Chicago. So it's pretty fascinating that a band, that would get signed to a major record label would come from such a tiny place in the middle of the cornfield.
That's how it happens, though, right? Like, it's, I feel like most people aren't born in the big city. They go there. It's like a magnet.
That's true. That's true.
Kurt Cobain down in Aberdeen is not exactly the mecca of rock and roll, or perhaps he made it that way or whatever, but like...
Yeah, it is now.
It was about coming to Olympia first and then really latching on to Seattle there that made that possible. So that's cool.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was always, the thing when we get got past college, we would make it go to the city and, yeah. and do our thing there, which really wasn't all that much better than it was in Macomb. But we ended up getting...
Well, I was just reading about Bon Iver, Justin Vernon, or whatever his name is, yeah. the artist behind Bon Iver, and he lives in the middle of nowhere,
Wisconsin. Yeah.
Just the amount of land you could get and the peace you could have, and then just go to the city when you want to.
But it's super appropriate for him and his music, though, isn't it?
It's sparse.
When you think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And honestly, in this day and age... where you can be in your bedroom anywhere in the world and record and then through the internet send it. So, I mean, you really don't need to be in a centralized metropolitan area anymore.
It's crazy when bands record parts in different places and then bring them together. I feel like there's something to be said for being in a room together and
for
having
sure.
to get through the tension that causes or the wonder that can spark.
For sure. Doing that right now with we're making a Dropbox record and it's kind of bizarre because it's like, here's my part. And then a week later, you get a response to that. It's like, wouldn't it be great if you could be in the same room and go like, no, I don't like that. And then... you know, forge out something that you do like together. Yeah. It's a little challenging, but it can be done.
Now, I have very little Illinois knowledge, but my mother is from Moline.
Okay.
And so Quad Cities.
Quad Cities, which is about 70 miles north of Macomb.
Okay. So I've been to there once. I remember one specific thing about it was the lightning bugs, something that I've never seen anywhere else that I live.
There's no lightning bugs here?
No lightning bugs here.
All right.
No.
So, yeah, it's been, well, been great. And,
thanks for coming to the pod. 5.5 minutes. We did it.
Wow. No, yeah, they're everywhere. You know, in the early summertime, they come out and around, you know, dusk, and there they are floating around. It's pretty bizarre. And when you're kids, you're horrible.
Yeah.
You catch them, you smash them, they... Ugh.
If I smash enough, I can make a paint that'll turn me into glowing.
That's it.
If I eat enough of them, I'll become a lightning bug.
Oh.
Gross.
Yeah,
so that, I don't know, there's that Midwestern living that I experienced just a little bit casually, but never got that middle America feel to things. Always West Coast, always cooked by the sun, always the scourge of the East Coasters or whatever, I don't know, or the Midwest.
The Midwest, I mean, every territory has definitely got its own way of living.
But Spotify and whatever else is kind of it started with iHeart. Or Clear Channel at the time, they really homogenized our country into culturally,
see
mainstream stuff. There's not room for all these pockets as much as there used to be.
That's true. Everybody, you know, does. We're a bunch of lemmings. Everybody looks at what other people do, and because we can now, because of the internet. You know, back in the day.
Back in my day.
It was a much simpler time. You just would read the local newspaper, and that's what was going on in your world.
But it's crazy to think that, the photos when we were kids are sparse because you had
photos.
To take them.
You mean things that you actually hold? And,
yeah.
Yeah.
They now my kid's, every fourth second of his life is documented. I get 5 photos a day from daycare of what he's up to. let alone.
Right. I know, when you look back at your old photos growing up, they're so special. They're oh, what a moment. Now, everything is a moment, and there's so many of them that they're not special anymore.
And now the machine is reminding me, a year ago, this moment happened, remember? I'm like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. What strange band was I looking at then? Because every time that comes up, it seems to be some band, and I have no recollection as to who that actually is because it's so far away.
It's crazy. We just had summer camp, the ENDS local festival that we do at once a summer, and I look back at last year's, and I'm like, no idea who that band is. 1 year later, I can't remember.
That's crazy.
I only know them for a hook for a minute, and then that's that.
Well, you know, somebody like me who is, you know, involved in the music for a radio station, I end up seeing so many bands, which I love.
Sure. It's the thing I miss most about doing mornings is that I can't...
You can't go out and...
I used to love just stumbling. I saw, not to get into the show off of who's seen whatever, but I saw Imagine Dragons when they were playing the Crocodile, a 250-person venue, just because a record rep was in town, but he wasn't working, and he's like, just come see this band with me. You'll like it.
Right.
And they blew my mind in this tiny little venue. They've blown up to be kind of more generic than, you know, and to what they do for the format is awesome, but they've taken on a new life. But to see them, I would never have thought that, oh my God, Imagine Dragons were so cool, XYZ.
And that's the thing. It's when given these opportunities to check out smaller, unknown, up-and-coming bands in new, small venues, man, it's so exciting. I saw Catfish in the Bottleman play a 250-seat venue.
Yeah.
in Chicago. There may have been 70 people there, and Van, the singer, talked more than he actually played songs, brought people on stage, very uncomfortable. The whole thing was weird, but when they played their songs, it was like, man, this is really, really great. Saw them the next time through, same place, sold it out, and now they're going to play a 4,500-seat venue.
Untouchable.
In Chicago, and they are on top of their – they're such a great live rock band now. It's amazing. So it's fun to see these bands – the beginning stage.
Well, and then, like, counterexample, I saw Arctic Monkeys play, and Alex Turner was so wasted, and the band was a disaster, and it was an awful show at the Showbox, which is an amazing venue here.
Right.
Awful show, and I was like, oh, man. It was on their second album. I couldn't wait.
What record cycle that was.
Yeah, second or third, I can't remember, but, like, they played a few songs where I was like, yeah, oh, this is awful. And then, like, I lost all confidence in them and stopped consuming their material because of it.
I was going to ask, so it affected your connotation of, or perception of them.
Yeah, and then you see someone else that's just like mind-bogglingly good that you don't have any expectation for. I like when a band that you want to be good is good too. Like a Band of Horses here is like a really that's really nice.
Now it's great when you are absolutely surprised. You're like, holy crap! I didn't expect that to be anything great, but that blew my mind.
What's the venue you'll miss most from Chicago?
Good question. The Metro.
Yeah, it's a suite.
Metro is how big is the Showbox?
Showbox is, I want to say, 1,500.
Okay, Metro's 1,100.
Yeah, it's the same. I mean, it's the same.
But it's everybody's played there coming through Chicago. It's been around since the mid, early 80s.
Have you been to the Showbox yet?
I played it back in the day.
Look at that. It's the venue when a band that I am interested in, when they say they're playing the Showbox, it immediately raises my interest level. Same thing with the Metro. My brother lived around the corner, so like they would I'd go visit him, and if there was a band playing, Tortoise was playing. They canceled the day I was supposed to see them. I'm so mad. I went to Chicago for that.
Really, just for that?
Yeah, just, I mean, to see my brother, but like I was like, I'll time it.
Yeah,
I
see my brother too, but Tortoise is playing.
Yeah, awesome Chicago noise band. Yeah. Not noise, but an instrumental band that's like really cool. But anyway.
Yeah, Metro's has so much history and has been good to me personally and the band that, you know, just so many memories there. That I'm going to miss that one the most, but yeah.
Always get back.
Time to make some new ones.
Yeah, exactly. You'll find that I've lived in Las Vegas and the venues there are the best. It's incredible how good they all sound because they're competing for entertainment. And they spend a zillion dollars and like so they have all these beautifully sounding venues.
I'm glad you said sounding because
soulless.
How much vibe is there? How much soul does a building have?
Yeah.
When they get
Because like everything else, when you're in Vegas, you walk into a giant casino before you get to the movie theater, the bowling alley, the restaurant, which is just a facade that it's not part of the casino floor.
Right.
Same with these, like the House of Blues,
House of Blues in Mandalay Bay, and the joint in the Hard Rock or whatever it is now. They might as well be high school auditoriums.
Yeah, but then they invest all this money to make them sound awesome. Right. And so as a music fan, man, it's so great to see. And the bands are getting handsomely paid. So like lots of times they'll bring
true.
It. Like,
that's true.
But it's also where you know all the sin happens. So people maybe indulge a little too much. Okay, so when did you first move to Chicago?
First moved to Chicago after college. And so that's the end of the 80s.
Okay.
And like I said, then I started moving around because I was in radio at the time.
Cool. Where'd you start in radio?
You want the honest to God truth?
Yeah.
The honest, outside of college radio was KBKB in Fort Madison, Iowa, which was a top 40 station playing 45 records.
Wow.
It was my very first job. And I would have to drive 40 minutes to get to this job because there weren't any real radio jobs in Macomb. So I'd have to go do that. And then I moved to Galesburg, where I kind of did the same thing, only we used carts. And then and then I did an internship in Chicago and befriended the program director at the top 40 station I was interning at. And he brought me back to be a morning show producer. I was horrible at it. but I did it for 10 months or something like that. And then I also had a part-time job at a pretty prominent station in Rockford. So I lived in between, and I've always driven my entire life. And right now, I just took a bus. It took me 20 minutes, and I'm loving life because I'm not driving.
You're in West Seattle?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so awesome just to be able to hop on a bus and get here.
It's so nice. In Chicago, tangent now, yeah. But I was driving an hour and a half in the morning commute to get to the station.
And that's not your time anymore. You can put on a podcast. You can listen to the radio station you work for because that's what we all do when we're in the car, right?
Sure.
Or you can put on a podcast or an audiobook or something like that, but it's not your time. You're still focused and stressed.
Right. It is still stressful. And I have an extra hour a day. It's amazing here in Seattle.
It's
crazy.
And you take a bus and someone else commutes you to where you're going. You can look at your phone the whole time if you want.
Fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic. So then I ended up in Peoria, Illinois, doing nights at a top 40 station, and everybody in the band said, all right, we're all quitting our jobs and we're going to apply ourselves to the band.
Let's go. You
in or are you out? And I'm like, I started this thing.
I am the band. Let's talk about the band. We'll get back to radio here in a second. But the band that you started in what year?
In the 80s.
In the 80s. Sequencing, is that what you were doing? Or?
Well, it was keyboards and programming, sequencing, yeah.
Okay. Stabbing Westward is the band. For me, as a teenager in the 90s, Stabbing Westward came at the exact right time. It was heavy, but it was melodic. It was real synth forward, but it was like intense still. It was like exactly what 14-year-old me needed to hear at the time.
You're welcome.
Thank you. That's what I'm trying to do. It's a huge thanks for that. But I don't know the story of the band at all.
Well, Christopher and I met at summer band camp when we were in high school.
Like marching band?
He played trumpet. No, yeah. It was concert band camp.
Oh, okay.
So he played trumpet. I played percussion. It's a week. It was at the university in my town. So he migrated from his even smaller town a half hour away.
Wow.
And we were both chasing the same girl that week. neither of us got her.
Okay.
But we ended up being best friends. And here we are all these years later.
Have you stayed friends the whole time?
There's been a few years of falling out.
Sure.
But we started bands, and you know, it's went through many different intonations or incarnations, and eventually we landed on Stabbing Westward, which was we were very influenced by the Wax Trax industrial scene from Chicago, but also Depeche Mode, which is a more melodic, and so it was always a matter of being more melodic, but always had that Chicago industrial thing going on.
What are some of the Chicago industrial bands that have been big over the time?
Well, Ministry is probably the biggest. Nine Inch Nails, not a Wax Trax band, but in the same field, and definitely pushed the let's be melodic and write good songs, and then that leads to things like Linkin Park. So like it's all part of that crew. Front 242 would be a Skinny Puppy. These are deeper, darker industrial things.
Cool.
When we moved to Chicago, we ended up pulling more people into the band, guitars and a live bass player and a live drummer, and it morphed into being more of a rock band. We would do shows opening up for the Pumpkins.
Cool.
In like a 500-seat venue.
We're talking like Gish Pumpkins?
Pre-Gish.
Wow.
And
they were pulling 500 people before Gish? That's amazing.
They did the most amazing cover of Do You Hear What I Hear at a Christmas show that we did together. It was amazing. They had Christmas lights on their amps, and it was so heavy the way they did it. It was great. We ended up putting together the right formula of people, and we concentrated on recording a really great demo that was melodic and had songs with hooks, but still had the aggressive beat. And I think the timing was just right because Nine Inch Nails was breaking and record labels were looking for their own version. And lo and behold, here we came, and I guess we didn't suck. So Columbia Records said, all right, we'll take that. And
that's really interesting. You say that though, because Nine Inch Nails for me, I was not sold on Nine Inch Nails. I liked heavy guitar, and I didn't like synthesizers and stuff like that at the time when they were blowing up. And I thought he was being weird for the sake of being weird. And so you like touched on it there, a band that was like, let's focus on making some good songs with like the right elements.
Right.
Nine Inch Nails kind of paved the way for me to be like, And then a band like yours came along where I could be like, yes, I can, like, I can access this.
Well, again, you kind of touched on it when you were talking about how it spoke to you as a teenager. It's the balance. For us, it's always the balance between organic and electronic.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to be right. And I think we got it right on the majority of our records.
I agree.
Whereas, you know, Trent and Nine Inch Nails always had guitars, but they were always a little bit more processed maybe and a little heavier on the programming synth side of things.
Yeah.
We were kind of straight down the middle. It had to be equal and still have melody and you could still be able to sing along with it. And the other thing is I think Christopher writes really amazing lyrics that really speak to people because of real life experiences that are shared experiences. And I think that that's a big part of the success.
It's funny. I'm like totally oral, like I'm not, like I don't, the lyrics rarely, it takes me years of listening before I get
most
there.
Guys are like that. Yeah. Too. I am definitely like that. I definitely listen to beats and grooves and bass lines and chord changes, all that. Oh, there's somebody singing, let me listen to what they're saying.
I mean, the singer is an instrument then at that point,
right?
But I do have a pet peeve, and Mr. Reznor does this a lot, where he just repeats the same thing over and over.
I do too.
And I'm like that's, yeah, no offense, on. Trent, I know you're a big listener, but I think it's lazy.
Yeah. No, I, you know, and there's times, especially on our first record, where I was like, yeah, come on, can we say something else?
Yeah.
So, and we've done a better job of that as time has gone on. But
okay, so you're in Peoria. It's like, yeah, you gotta quit your job, bro.
Driving to Chicago to do work on the demos and all of this kind of stuff. And everybody's like, are you gonna quit or not? I'm like, okay, I guess I can always get back into radio. So sure, I quit. And probably only out for a month and a half, 2 months until we actually got the Columbia deal. So it wasn't super scary, but I did give up, you know, a cushy life doing this.
At least you were young, you know.
And that's the thing. I was still super young, so I was able to do that. And the gamble paid off. 10 years of professionally being in the band, doing that solely, and touring, getting to see the world.
How much of the world have you seen in that band?
Well, not as much as I'd like. I never made it to Japan or anything. Made it to Australia on the very last tour we ever did, opening up for Live, and that was fantastic.
Oh, I don't see that as a bill. That's crazy.
It's weird. Well, you have to realize that our last record, we got steered off the path we had forged, and it was a lighter sounding record and more alternative radio friendly, but yet we kind of lost our fan base. So it the wheels started to come off at that point. But at that point, we still meant something. We did the first record cycle for Ungod, the first record. We opened up for Depeche Mode, which was like a huge, huge win for us. We did
you think?
The summer, the Songs of Faith and Devotion tour, but the second go around where they were playing outdoor amphitheaters.
Yeah.
And this was the summer of 94, and we were first, then it was Primal Scream, then Depeche Mode. And apparently Dave Gahan picked Primal Scream, Martin Gore picked us, and great. And it was a fantastic tour. Unfortunately, the band kind of imploded. Alan Wilder left the band. Dave was a mess and had to go get himself clean. And when they came back together and did their next tour 4 years later, we actually meant something. And so our name got raised, and they're like, yeah, all right, they actually mean something. Let's go out. And so we did two consecutive North American tours with Depeche Mode.
Holy
4
cow.
Years apart.
So you guys pals now? Like, do you?
I wouldn't say pals, but really, really, I did go to Martin Gore's wedding reception.
So there you go. Yeah, like it's like
I don't know if that's a thing.
No, but I mean, it's just it's so easy to put human beings into this role, to dress them up and say this is what you are, and then get far down the road and realize like, oh, actually we're kind of friends now because we've been through a lot together, regardless if it stays that way.
I mean, you become peers, which is kind of bizarre.
That's
a
good word for it
when you think about it. You know, if we were, I've been in the same room with you know, and Depeche is still such a much more giant band than we ever were, and I've been sitting across a picnic table from the dude, and I'm like, I'm not going to be, hey, remember me? I don't care that much.
Yeah, you don't strike me as the guy that's like trying to.
I mean,
prove
if he's just like, don't I know you? I'm like, yeah, well, we actually, but Otherwise, I'm not going to, I don't need to flex any muscle.
Yeah, man.
It's fine. I had my time with them.
Wow, that's so, like, living in Chicago, I'm fast forwarding a little bit here, but like as recently as a month ago, do you ever have any interaction with Billy Corgan? Like,
yeah.
Is there a relationship there? Because from way back in the day, but then now he...
I mean, every time our paths cross, there's like, oh yeah, we grew up together and cordial and nice. And I've seen him a couple of times in the past 3-4 years. Actually, at the radio station I was at in Chicago, we brought Pumpkins in to our performance space, mm-hmm. which was something that they hadn't done a lot of.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was, you know, James and Billy and actually the entire band that's touring right now, which, by the way, if you haven't seen Pumpkins in this current incarnation, great.
Yeah, they came through, and I didn't go because.
Right, well, one of the best sounding Pumpkin shows I've seen in years. So, really awesome to have them here. And then I interviewed them as we do with those performances, and it was fantastic. So, and then I went to the show at the big arena in Chicago, and I was front and center. I'm like, who gave me front row tickets? This is ridiculous, because I look around and everybody's looking at me. I'm like, I don't want to be in the front row. But
still, that's cool. Man.
You know what was cool about it is that I didn't get distracted by anything. I was actually like watching them switch guitars and the kind of pedals were they using. I got really nerdy watching from the front row.
It's crazy. My brother was living in Chicago at the time as well, when you're talking about small Pumpkins. And mm-hmm. so when they blew up in the early 90s, he was like, I used to watch this band in bars.
Yeah.
Like, they were just a band.
But they were there was always something special about
right.
them.
Right, because you watch that old footage of it. Yeah, YouTube's a wonderful thing.
That's the thing. You can tell when bands have, like when you saw Imagine Dragons at the Croc.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you can tell when a band has some magic and some chemistry and has potential. And those are the things that you want to go see. And,
God, and I go back and listen to Gish, and it's like, it's, you listen to Siamese Dream, and it feels like it's really assembled to me. There's great songs on there.
Sure.
Not my favorite record, but there's like great songs that they put together
Gish
on there.
Gish is pure. I think first records are pure because you have your whole, I mean, the saying is you have your whole life to write your first record,
yeah.
and then 6 months to do your second. It's true, but first records are pretty honest to who you conceive yourself to be as a band.
And boy, does it not pull back. It's just straight ahead the whole time. And
right.
I can't imagine living in a world where a 5.5 minute song with guitar solos exists also because of what we've become
I know,
in the music
right?
world. But like, there it is. Like, he launches into a long ass hammer on guitar solo. Nice. And I'm like, wow.
And melodic.
Yeah. And people can't, even if the landscape allowed for that to still be a thing, he still has magic that
yeah.
I don't know if he's been in touch with it in, you know, in a while, but like at that time there was still something that was like that came out of that guy that was incredible.
Yeah.
That's crazy to be on, to share a stage with them, and not because
at
it
that
was
level,
a
yeah.
festival.
Right.
It was just
right.
like on
right.
purpose.
I've shared the stage with a lot of people, like, you know, big names, but on a small token level like Pumpkins back then before Gish came out.
Yeah, sorry to talk about other bands
when
we're
fine.
Talking about your story, but it's just fascinating to color in the
yeah.
details about that. Okay, so you did a 10-year run in Stabbing Westward?
Yep, and then, as I said, the last record, we kind of got steered in a direction that wasn't really true to our fan base, and you could tell that things were starting to go on the decline. And
was that inevitable, or was it?
I think it's inevitable with most bands, unless you're the Rolling Stones.
Especially today, man.
Yeah, right. But it was one of those where we just did not want to be that band that just keeps running into the wall, and just failing more and more every time. So
yeah.
we're like, let's cut it right now. We can see this is we're lost. And then I'm like, I'm going to go right back into radio. Christopher was like, let's start another band. We can do this the way we wanted to originally. I'm like, uh-uh. I'm gonna go do something stable for a while.
Yeah. So you chose radio.
I chose radio.
Congratulations.
And then I moved from Los Angeles, California, to Albany, New York.
Wow. In December.
It was April, but still, it was a culture shock of a move that is I'm a better man for it.
Do you think any doors in radio open for you because of your experience?
Well, that's why I went to Albany, to be honest with you, because, you know, I went to the Edge in Phoenix for a minute to spend a week.
When was that?
2002.
Wow.
And because I was friends with Dead Air Dave and Nancy Stevens. And so they're like, well, why don't you just come here, hang out for a week, hang on the morning show. Maybe we can get you some hours, you know, filling in the midday. And I got fresh demo material so I could shop. And I was like, but I don't want to be the celebrity DJ. And by going to Albany, I was really given the opportunity to be a night guy and a music director and forge, my image as to who I am and make my name there in a real market, not too far away from New York City. A lot of the record reps would work Albany from New York. And it worked because I was able to really make a name for myself in the radio world at that market. And after about a year and a half, I ended up at XM.
Oh, cool.
And so then I did that.
Because that's when that was blowing up, right?
It was like the second wave. So I think XM started in 2001, and I went there in 2003. And so it was kind of like the second wave of people, or the first wave of new people coming in after the originals.
Sure, yeah.
But it was still fresh. It was like, you know, we're not FM radio. We're doing everything differently, so we don't think like that. Fascinating time, and I really, really believed in what we were doing. But then I was doing well there. And
Real quick, before you jump. The XM thing, what a precursor to what the world looks like today. What an interesting insight into being like, no, we're going to throw out the old rules and kind of do it. Now we have YouTube stars that follow, you know, like the same ideals of stardom, but with a totally different avenue. That's kind of, for me, it's fascinating that you would go somewhere like that, that was throwing the rule book out and taking a huge chance on investors' money.
Well, but it was music centric. It was like they were about, there were no rules. You could play stuff. So I went there originally to do classic alternative. They had a channel called Fred, and I'm like, well, this is, I can pull from all the stuff I played in college and all the old stuff, and so I'm well versed in this. And then that migrated into working on the contemporary, which was called Ethel, and I would pull, and this was like 2004, I would play things like Block Party and Franz Ferdinand and Arcade Fire alongside Foo Fighters and Green Day, and so you could bring people along. So I don't know this, I'm unfamiliar, but here's something that I do know and I feel comfortable, and then you can kind of like take them on a journey and expose them to new things. And alternative music was starting to get new legs. We had just gone through, you know, Limp Bizkit and Train and those types of Korn. That was considered to be good alternative in the early 2000s. So to get Franz Ferdinand and Block Party and these bands that kind of sounded like Gang of Four or just had a new energy about them was pretty exciting times to be here and do that. So I would do that, and a gentleman named Cliff Bernstein, who is one half of Q Prime Management, who manages the Chili Peppers, Muse, Metallica, so many giant bands.
Baroness.
Cliff would listen, and he heard what I was doing, and he said, I want you to come work for us. I like what I hear, and I want your ears to be a part of Q Prime.
How cool.
So,
in what capacity? Management or A&R?
It was in an A&R capacity.
And that's where A&R effectively is seeking new talent.
Artist repertoire. So you search out new talent and help guide them to make the best records that they can with the best songs. So the premise was that I would go work in New York for Q Prime, and we would start a record label, boutique record label. But we didn't want to be a cookie cutter like everything else. So it was a matter of trying to find interesting bands that excited us. Excited Cliff, and I found two. We called the label Grunion, after the fish that spawns itself, and found these two records. The first band was a band called Mohair that I found out of the UK that was super English sounding. If you're familiar with the Fratellis, and they had that song Chelsea Dagger that's big in Chicago because they played it when the Hawks score a goal.
Oh yeah, that'll do it.
just very English sounding, and they were amazing players. And so we put out their first record and started working on a second record. But they're such good. This is kind of a curse that they were such good players that they kind of lost their way as to who their identity is, to who they were. They're like, hey, here's our new wave song, here's our reggae song, and it's just like, guys, back square one. But I, and if they're listening, I love them.
Of course, yeah. It's
not... But and they gave me like 18 songs, so we were never able to get to the second record there. The other one was a band from Madison, Wisconsin, called Rainer Maria, that had a big past as a indie band, but they wrote this amazing record called Catastrophe Keeps Us Together, and we put that out and put them on the road, and they toured with a band called The Format, which later became Fun, and did Lollapalooza, but then they broke up, and so that was done. And at that point, they're like, all right, well, how about you work with producers? And so then I did daily management for producers, worked with Rich Costi, who produced Muse and Death Cab and stuff like that, and then a guy named David Bendith, who did the Paramore record Riot. Really big record. And so then I was doing budgets and seeing how I, so I've seen this business from so many different sides. It's really fascinating. I see how all of these parts kind of work together.
That's crazy. As soon as you said you've seen the budgets and stuff, I think Chicago, and then I go Albini being
right?
Old grump. You ever had any encounters with producer Steve Albini?
None, because I'm a programming synth guy.
Oh, that's right. You're not building your own amplifier and playing dirty guitar through it.
I'm evil.
That's crazy. He recorded a Neurosis record, which is like a kind of like a doom band that I really like. And they got him to slave it to DAT.
Really?
Yeah, they said that they really just kept poking at him over the course of like 5 days. And finally, he was like, fine, I'll record it to DAT. God damn it. So he could go back and put synth in back in San Francisco when they got home, or Oakland or whatever.
I mean, I bet he loved that.
And so they've gone back and recorded with him since, or
really?
Whatever. Yeah, yeah, they're like, they're pals now or whatever. I always thought it was funny that somebody got Albini.
Somebody
to
got him, yeah. Because that was his thing forever, was like, you know, no, this is, it's pure as can be. I mean, like, he didn't produce In Utero. He recorded it.
Yeah, he's a recording engineer. He's using math to put microphones in the right spot and stuff, which is...
Fantastic talent, though. I mean, an incredible person, his talent is unrivaled.
We had a Chicago band, Rise Against.
Yep.
Here we were volunteering at a food bank for a day or whatever, and Tim from Rise Against walks in, and I'm wearing a Shellac shirt.
Oh.
And he, like,
right?
All bets are off. He, like, walks straight up to me and goes, is that a Shellac shirt? And I was like, yep. And he's like, cool, I'm Tim. And I was like...
He's like that. Great. What a great group of guys.
What a great group of guys. 100%.
I mean, great band, but man, they are real, genuine people who still live... I actually lived in the same suburb as one of the guys in the band, Downers Grove, and he's a family man, and he was like, if you need a plumber, check this guy out. It was fantastic. I love them.
That's like back to the point when you like meet somebody and you see them as a peer rather than a performer.
Yeah, somebody on a pedestal.
Yeah, which is so crazy. There's so many great Chicago bands. I'm just trying to think. All that keeps coming to mind is Russian Circles, which is like a small nobody Chicago band.
Yeah,
that's like,
I think I know those guys.
It doesn't matter. They're one of the guys played bass in another band here. I won't be able to remember it. My friend did t-shirts. Not coming to me. All right, doesn't matter. But there's been so many big Chicago bands. How many of them have you seen when they were little? And how long were you back in Chicago for?
Well, so then...
Well, yeah, let's get from...
I was at Q Prime,
yeah.
And then that kind of ran its course. They kind of restructured. They brought in another guy who is a real A&R guy. They started Mom and Pop Records, came out of a joint deal with Q Prime. So things went by the wayside, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to go back to Chicago. And then I went to... I went to work on the alternative station there, but they actually needed help on the classic rock station, The Loop, which is a heritage classic brand. I did that for 2 years, which was good because a new owner came in and they actually blew up Q101, which was the heritage alternative station.
Q101, the alternative radio station with the best logo of all time.
The best logo because it was based on the NIN logo, the Nine Inch Nails logo.
So cool.
It worked so well.
It was so clean.
Just in a box, yep.
Sorry to anyone who's listening to this that just has to hear us nerd out about things, and I'm not giving any explanation whatsoever. Look it up.
Because I was on The Loop at the time, my job was safe. And then about 10 months after that, the new company, we brought Alternative back on a new frequency. and they realized that it was kind of my wheelhouse. And so I've been a part of rebuilding alternative radio in Chicago for the past 8 years or so.
Okay, so...
So I was there for 9 and a half.
So who...
The past 9 and a half.
Who have we seen come out of Chicago in that time that maybe you got a chance to see it kind of happen? Like Rise Against, I mean, they've been big for a while
Rise
now.
Rise Against was before that.
I'm trying to think of if anything's popping from Chicago right now or where everyone's coming from, because I feel like Seattle doesn't have a ton of big names coming out right now. There was these moments where you got the Fleet Foxes and stuff like that were happening, but like you haven't had a big impact band in a while.
Right. Yeah, I don't.
Someone's gonna be like, "There's like an obvious
I know,
one that
I'm
missing."
And
like,
add your comments below.
Yeah.
I know that. I think of things like Kay Flay, who grew up in a suburb of Chicago, moved to San Francisco.
Interesting. I didn't know that about her. Yeah. There was something that screamed approachable, and
yep.
It's like it's that Midwest.
She grew up in a northern Chicago suburb, but then moved to go to Stanford. I was. And so, and now when she comes back to Chicago, it's still kind of like a hometown thing. And I saw her at this 250-seat venue, sold out, and it was a record person, same thing, going like, you got to come check out this band. And I kind of like the song, but when I saw it live, I'm like, mind blown,
yeah.
Love her, and we've become friends, and every time she comes around, I go say hi, check her out, and we played her songs on the radio. Just a big, big fan.
Really mess her up when she comes here and you're here, and you're like, hi.
Shh, don't tell her.
Everyone, off the Twitter.
Let's see if she really knows who I am.
I'm trying to figure out, where are bands coming out of right now? Like,
yeah, where's the hot spot? I feel like, I don't know.
I mean, it's always L.A. There's always something.
Yeah,
always
yeah. I mean, Half Alive out of L.A., Lovely the Band out of L.A. I mean, yeah.
Can't put my thumb on it. Like, Ohio? I'm just thinking, like, Walk the Moon, having just been here.
You know, an interesting person coming out of Chicago is Chance the Rapper.
Oh, yeah.
Who actually, after years of being able to headline festivals.
Blows my mind.
Suddenly just put out his first album.
First album?
You know?
Like, he's almost a household name. Like, I think about my old man wouldn't know who he is, but, right. Like, he's just right there.
He's done so many mixtapes that he's just built a name for himself. But the thing about him is his philanthropy is, like, unbelievable. He has given so much to the Chicago public school system that you can't not love who he is as a person.
Yeah.
And it, you know, and then he just did this track with Ben and Death Cab, and it's just, you know.
It's pretty funny to see Gibbard running around here. Like, you'll be out, and you'll see him at something. It's, like, very. Like,
really?
Yeah, all those guys are just, like. And same with the Pearl Jam guys. They're just like, I ran into McCready at Whole Foods. Just like,
right.
Randomly, like, I scared the crap out of him. And it was like
I had a great conversation with him when I was at XM. We talked for an hour, all about nerdy guitar stuff that we listened to growing up. I just saw Nick from Death Cab at Lollapalooza and told him I was coming up here. And so it's like, yeah, it's great. I love, and that's one of the things that I love about coming from Chicago to Seattle, is because it is a music town, and I obviously am a music guy, and I appreciate the history here, and I want to be surrounded by that vibe. It's a very neighborhoody city in Chicago, and Seattle, and I just, there's so many things that equate that this is the perfect fit for me.
It really is similar.
That's
very interesting. I wonder if it's the types of immigrants that came here, like back, that founded these places.
I don't know. There's a lot of Polish restaurants around here in Seattle that I've stumbled upon, so maybe.
For real?
It seems like there's a few that I've passed, more than I've seen in Chicago, which is really Polish.
What are you going to miss from Chicago now
pizza.
That you're here?
Yeah. That's an easy one.
Yeah. What's the hot beef? Italian beef.
Italian beef.
With
the
giardiniera and like the...
Yeah, oh yeah. Portillo's or...
Yeah, exactly. Man, I like look forward to that when I go to Chicago. My family knows what's up.
My last week, I did plenty of Lou Malnati's pizza.
Yeah.
And Portillo's.
I have a former friend. She unfriended me on Facebook. I'm not sure why. Sore subject. But she used to, her parents for all the holidays would always send a Lou Malnati's pizza to her. They'd send them out boxed and frozen and like get a deep dish pizza in the mail.
That's a great gift.
Oh, goddamn. Okay, so you're going to do afternoons on the end?
I'm going to be here in the afternoons starting next week.
And you're going to deal with people who are bringing in new music?
Yep.
And you're going to be dropping the hammer on people who don't bring in the best new music.
Bring the good stuff, because that's what we want to deliver to the fantastic listeners of the end.
What are you excited about in Seattle?
All of it. You know what? I'm actually excited to get out and see some of the environment that is offered here, because Chicago is flat as can be, and there's nothing to really do outside of the lakefront and all that kind of stuff. And I also, my goal is to get a friend with a boat, because I never was able to accomplish that in Chicago. So here, I got to find a friend with a boat.
Yeah, it shouldn't be. I don't think that should be too difficult.
But I want to get out and do some mild hiking to begin with. But just explore all of the islands. And there's so much to see here. It's uncharted territory for me. So I'm very excited to do that.
It's crazy because I'll go places here and there's so many things that you're talking about. Like the things you're talking about, there's so many of them rather, that you go to Mount Rainier and hike Paradise. And then I want to go back there as soon as possible. But also there's 57 other places I want to go back to. So all these places I go to, then you go back after 5 years and you're like, why haven't I been here? This is so awesome. But every time I go back somewhere, I'm always like, oh, that's right. This is so dope.
See, but isn't that amazing, though? Yeah. I mean, because it's a new discovery that you rediscover. And you're like, man, I love this. Nah, I love that. And now you just, I love where I live.
Yeah, it's really easy for that to happen here, especially if you get outside. If you just stumble out there and don't be afraid of the rain. And just go experience it.
I love hoodies. Brought a lot of them.
Dude, you get us. That's it. Thanks, dude.
You got it.
You've been listening to So You're in Seattle with Gregor. Follow him on Twitter at HeyGregor. Find more episodes online at SoYou'reInSeattle.com. So You're in Seattle is a Burrito Butt production.
Yeah, you're a good dog, Joe.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.